Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What some people call lucky isn't so much luck as just avoiding disaster. In my opinion, that word should be reserved for events like winning the lottery or finding a lump of gold in your backyard. It's not really lucky to get an early diagnosis of a life-threatening disease, nor is it lucky to survive a catastrophic car crash. But people say that sort of thing all the time. Maybe it's a personal thing. People have been calling me lucky for years now, and it grates on me. I certainly didn't feel very fortunate after the accident. That afternoon was stormy, the clouds bruised purple-gray and pregnant with unshed rain. Thunder rattled the street signs as my brother and I hurried down the winding footpaths around the bays, our shoulders hunched in anticipation of the impending downpour. But instead of rain, something else came down from the sky. I'd been nearest to the lamppost where the lightning hit, but I don't remember a single detail of the actual event. My brother recalls a searing flash, then the stink of burning hair and the roar of thunder overhead. I'd been thrown 10 feet into the road, and the next car stopped just in time, assuming there had been a hit-and-run. The driver was an ER nurse on her way home. He had administered CPR and restarted my seized heart. He was the first one to say it. You were really lucky I finished my shift early. Otherwise, I'd never have been driving past at that time. Lucky. Everything hurt, but my right side was the worst. The lightning strike had arced into my shoulder as my bare arm grazed the metal pole, part of the currents running through me to the ground. "You were lucky it wasn't your left side," explained the doctor. "It could have burned a hole through your heart." Lying in the hospital in blind agony, I didn't feel lucky at all. The shockwave had impacted my eyes, causing the corneas to buckle and fracture. The result was at once horrible and quite beautiful. Milky, star-shaped occlusions known as star cataracts. They were able to replace the left cornea with a dead girl's. They wouldn't tell me who she was. She was around my own age. And she wasn't lucky at all. She drowned in a river, trapped under a fallen branch. My right eye was unsalvageable. Damage to the optic nerve meant I'd never see out of it again. They offered to replace the cochlea anyway. They offered to replace the cornea anyway, to match the other one. But I decided that I liked the strangely pretty, crystalline shape of the star cataract. Even if I didn't call it lucky, it was a reminder that I'd survived being hit by lightning. My brother, Michael, forever blamed himself for the events of that day. It was his fault that we were delayed at the beach. He wanted to chat up some girl he liked, long after we were supposed to head home. I forgave him years ago. Most 15-year-old boys are at the mercy of their hormones, but his guilt lingered so strongly that I worried it had truly damaged him, that he'd never have a normal life. In a way, the accident hurt him more than it had hurt me. He was always there. If I moved houses, he'd turn up with a van, loading all the boxes, insisting that I shouldn't lift a finger. Every birthday was elaborate, and every year Michael offered to pay for surgery to fix my star-shaped eye. I think it really bothered him, seeing the cataract. Every time he looked at me, he saw his careless teenage lust staring back at him. overcoming his common sense, putting his sister in danger. When I moved to the other side of the country, he came with me. He uprooted his whole life, quit his job, left his girlfriend, and sold everything he owned just to stay close to his half-blind little sister. In truth, I'd done it mostly to get away from him, to try and gain a little independence. But I couldn't tell Mike that. I suppose I reconciled it with myself that he needed to do something that really cost him, to atone for the mistake he had felt he had made. And I hoped it would finally free him, that such a huge sacrifice would be enough to fill the gaping, guilty void in his heart. But it was not. Looking after his crippled sister had moved from penance to pathology. It wasn't just about the guilt anymore. It had become his purpose. It had become who he was. I felt unkind when I thought that he was a little too in love with his martyrdom, and I felt selfish because I didn't tell him to go away. But I guess I'd grown so used to him always being there. My right eye had been my master eye, and adjusting to use only my left had been surprisingly difficult. The lack of depth perception especially bothered me, and I really hated the sudden surge in popularity for 3D films. They highlighted my disability even more. And with right eye dominance goes right hand dominance, which was also a problem for me. The lightning strike had damaged a lot more than just my eyes. The sudden and powerful muscle contractions caused by that massive electrical current had pulverized several bones. My own shocked flesh like a vice. Comminuted fractures heal poorly, and I could never fully straighten my right arm, or regain much mobility in that wrist. Retraining yourself to be left-handed takes work and practice. Mike insisting on doing everything for me really didn't help. He took over to the point where I swear he would have wiped my ass if I'd asked him to. After we moved, I embraced my inner bitch, and I'd yell at him to fuck off. To leave me alone for one goddamn hour and let me do things myself. He blamed the outbursts on my trauma and would be so understanding that I'd grit my teeth in frustration until my jaws ached as much as my wrist. In truly dark and shameful moments, I'd wished he had been the one who had brushed past the lamppost. Sometimes I'd wished that passing nurse hadn't stopped his car. And the more people told me I was lucky, the less I told the truth. Eventually, the story behind the star cataracts became a mundane little lie. Just a curious birth defect. My twisted arm just the legacy of a clumsy child. Then one day, on a visit to the coast, I see something. And I see it with my blind eye. When both eyes are open, I see nothing. With the right eye, not even darkness. When I close my good eye, sometimes I fancy I could see something through the star. I try to convince myself that maybe a few photons can drift through all that damaged jelly, and that the optic nerve isn't as fried as I know it is. On particularly bright days, like the morning of our sojourn by the sea, I experiment. I stare into the sun with my blind eye to see if anything at all can get through. The day was breathlessly clear, the sky perfect and cloudless. Blue as a child's painting. I sat in the warm sand and covered my good eye, turning my face full into the glare. Something flashed across the blank nothingness of my blindness, so quickly that I almost didn't register it. As quickly as a lightning strike. Jesus, I swore, dropping my hand. Mike was there in an instant. What is it, Brooke? I saw something. Out of my bad eye. Just for a second. His worry turned skeptical. Brows humoring me with a frown. It was probably nothing. Random neurons firing. No, I saw something. I turned away from him, conveniently blocking out his condescending gaze by covering my good eye. I'm gonna try again. Hey, don't do that. Staring into the sun can't be good for you, blind or not. Ignoring him, I turned my head again, just catching something. A fracture in the field of nothing, a hint of a light, straight as a torch beam shining into the heavens. Tilting my chin carefully, I snuck up on it, triangulating it back into my field of view where no view should have been possible. And there, yes, there, it was like torchlight. but instead of a white line on black, it was an eerie, impossible reversal. A black beam on a field of nothing. I pointed with my other hand. It's like a light, a beam, shining up from the ground and into the sky, over there. Uncovering my sighted eye, I squinted in the bright sun to see where I was pointing. My finger hovered directly over the smaller of two islands in the harbor, just a hump of rock and sand, with a few scraggly bushes clinging to it. There, it's coming from the island. Mike squinted at the salt-blasted landmark, and made a noise that was both dismissive and unreasonably irritating. I don't know what you think you're seeing, B. I could hear the quotation marks. But there's nothing out there. And trust the guy with two good eyes. Just seagull shit and a bunch of rocks. Seriously, Mike. I can see something there. I covered my eye again, peering into the blank gray nothing. And there it was again. The unwavering column of darkness, like a negative flare. Okay, whatever. He shrugged, shuffling his toes into the sand. There's some kind of mystery beacon out there that only you can see. Big deal. We'll let the Coast Guard know when they can check it out. Or just tell us you're nuts. No. I sounded like a petulant kid. And I didn't care. I want to see what it is. You're joking, right? We can rent a kayak and paddle out there. People do it all the time. He bunched his hands in the pockets of his shorts, a sure sign of resistance. No, Brooke, I'm not taking you out there. I sniffed, snatching my towel and sandals. Fine, I'll go out myself. It was manipulative and I knew it. I could see the glassy panic rising in his eyes already at the thought of his crippled sister clumsily rowing out to sea, dashing herself against a dangerous crag of rocks. He took his hands out of his pockets and picked up his backpack, every line of his body a quandary. All right, you win. We'll check it out quickly, but then we're going home. The weather's turning to shit later this afternoon anyway. Come on. He held out one broad hand, and I grabbed it with my good arm, letting him pull me up from the sand. It was an easy row out to the island, though I didn't think I helped much. The two-seater kayak slid effortlessly through the bright water with Mike's oar dipping and rising either side of the orange hull, each stroke strong and sure. It was farther than I thought, the distance from the shore deceptive, but the fresh tang of the ocean smelled good, like a promise. We beached on a narrow rind of sand on the far side. Mike hauled the vessel up onto the rocks and tied the lead rope securely around one of the stunted, thorny bushes. Don't want a freak wave to get it, he told me. There's no way we'd be able to swim back. Of course, he meant me. There was no way that I would be able to swim back, life vest or not. But he could easily save himself if some rogue tsunami washed the boat away. My hand over my good eye, I scanned about for the mystery beam, and I found it immediately. It beckoned from the apex of the V-shaped slash of sand, cradling between rising rocks. By covering and uncovering my eye, watching it appear with blindness and disappear with sight, I could make out that it originated from somewhere beneath the ground. Whatever's making it is under the bench, I explained, and I started to dig one-handed, conscious of how awkward I must look, like a child pretending to be a crane. Mike gave me a lopsided grin, something hopeful in the set of it. You're fucking with me, aren't you? Jesus, Mike, no. I saw something, and we're right on top of it. Either help me or shut up. Resigned, or more likely concerned that I'd hurt myself scrabbling in the hard-packed sand, he retrieved one of the oars out of the kayak. Here, this'll make things faster. Just don't break it or we'll lose the deposit. We dug for maybe 20 minutes, slowly widening the ever-collapsing hole. When the blade of the oar struck something hard, I made a small and triumphant sound of excitement. It's probably just rock, Mike cautioned. Ignoring him in my blister, I kept digging. The circle of black metal sat on the sand. It was smaller than a shrewd lid and thinner than a dinner plate. Yes, it was obscenely heavy, and it had taken both of us to get it out of the hole. As we lifted it, the weight shifted alarmingly inside it, as though the object contained a sea of liquid lead. "What the hell is that?" I asked. Mike said nothing for a long moment. He stared at the thing we had unburied, wiping sweat from his shiny, shaved scalp. I stared at it too, but with my blind eye. The anti-light was still shining from it, dark and strong, straight up into the sky. The surface of the disc was neither cool nor hot, though the black metal should have quickly grown scalding beneath the afternoon sun, and Mike said he still couldn't see even the vaguest hint of the beam rising from it. "This is starting to freak me out," my brother husked finally, his voice low and uncertain. Maybe it's some kind of NASA black box," I wondered, running my fingers over the slick, smooth surface. "That maybe only special equipment can detect the beacon."
"Yeah, or only all their half-blind astronauts can see it."
He was trying hard, but he wasn't even convincing himself.
"Maybe you shouldn't touch it. It could be radioactive."
I flattened my palms against it slowly and grinned up at him. "If it is, then we'd probably have lethal exposure already."
"Christ, Brooke, why do you joke about shit like that?"
My smile died.
"I don't know, I'm just trying to lighten the mood."
Mike huffed out of breath, one short step away from picking me up and bodily hauling me out of range.
"Look, we're going to head back and call the authorities. Let them deal with the damn thing."
He was already unwinding the kayak rope and pushing the vessel back into the sand.
"Okay, whatever. I hope they give us a reward or something."
"I just hope they don't lock us up," Mike shot back.
I stood over the object, looking down on it, still reluctant to leave it just lying there. What if it disappeared and took the only thing my blind eye had ever been able to detect along with it?
Take a picture of me with it?
God. He saw the stubborn set of my chin and knew we would get home quicker if he didn't argue.
"All right, fine. One pic. Then we're getting out of here."
He retrieved his phone from the waterproof pocket in his vest and aimed it at me, tilting it to get both me and the object in the frame.
"Okay, done. Let's move."
"One more. I want one with me standing on it."
"Hurry up, then."
I stepped off the sand and onto the disc of black metal. A wave of violent static discharge engulfed me, the crackle and shock of it terrifyingly familiar. And then the beach was gone, replaced by total darkness. My heart still beat. I seemed to be in some sort of cave, though cave didn't feel like quite the right word. While my good eye showed me only thick darkness, the view through my cataract was quite different. Everything had an anti-halo, strange and wrong in black light. I could make out that the chamber around me was cramped and oval, the walls and ceiling oddly ribbed. Forcing my unused eye muscles to focus, I realized the ribs were metallic tubing, interspersed with humps of tangled, colorless cables. Ahead of me, the mouth of the chamber opened into a low tunnel, its construction much the same. The narrow throat curved to the right and out of sight. A dull thump and crack right behind me spiked my skull with sharp, instant fear. My pulse a drumbeat in my ear. I stayed crouched for a long moment, then turned slowly, instinctively shielding my face. It was Mike. Groping blindly, he started yelling my name, stumbling into the walls. I hadn't heard him sound so panicked since the accident.
"I'm here,"
I called softly, touching his arm.
"Mike, I'm right here. I can't see anything,"
he warbled, terror writ large on his broad features, eerie and distorted in the soft, hard shadows.
"I can't fucking see anything."
I took both his flailing hands in mine and soothed him until he stopped shaking.
"It's okay. I can see for both of us. We're in some kind of cave with tubes all over the walls. There's a tunnel up ahead."
A cave? That doesn't...
Where the hell are we, B?
I have no idea. But if we follow the tunnel, maybe we can find a way out.
The passage was far too low to stand up in, so we crabbed along painfully, bent over double, shuffling, sometimes crawling. My voice guided him. Mike followed behind me. It took me some time to realize that the noise I kept hearing was his teeth clicking together as he shivered in the darkness. It was cold. Much, much colder than the waning heat of the spring afternoon we had left behind. Now just a memory, bright and distant. I could see my breath streaming in front of me, black as a cloud of ink in deep water, outlined by the maddening, impossible light.
"You just vanished,"
my brother told me, his voice halting and stuttering between shivers, echoing strangely in the tunnel.
And I ran over, and as soon as my feet touched it, I felt an electric shock. And then I was here.
What happened to your phone?
Gone. I must have dropped it when it jolted me.
The air tasted stale, flat, and expired, and I couldn't feel any breeze. A musty sourness choked my nose, as if old clothes, heavy with mildew, had been pulled from an ancient closet and puffed their invisible spores everywhere. My own teeth were chattering like castanets now, and Mike stopped talking completely, saving his energy as he thumped and groped blindly behind me. Just as I decided the tunnel was going to go on forever, that we would freeze to death here in the dark, the passage began to widen. It rose abruptly, leading to a large, vaulted space.
"There's a chamber ahead,"
I whispered to Mike, squinting back at the hunched, backlit shape that was my brother. His only response was to nod blindly, arms hugged over his chest for warmth. The floor and walls of our new, larger prison were built the same as the others. Whoever had built this place had an inexhaustible source of those monochrome tubes. Only their width varied, every few feet punctuated with tangles of cabling like the huge nests of industrial rats. Rising above us, the cylinders converged at the apex of the chamber, then appeared to have melted together. The silk puddle rippled impossibly across the ceiling, thick rivulets flowing down into a complicated umbilical mess. Neither organic nor plastic, I thought of intestines, colorless mushrooms, the eyes of snails, watching those smaller filaments branching off and hanging in the air. They moved and quested lazily as our presence disturbed the stale atmosphere. Connected to some of those filaments were fleshless corpses. I had no doubt these were genuine remains, and I was just as certain that they were not human. Each skeleton had two arms, but their bones were wrong. Too simple, too heavy, and too long. The cages of ribs were a complicated contrast honeycombed with holes, as if eroded by the relentless black light that crawled and spilled through their substance. None possessed legs or pelvis. Each strung-bead spine splayed into a horsetail of flattened filaments, gray as sick spittle and dissolving into the floor. I could not look for long at what had been their heads. Eyeless, jawless, smooth as a puffball fungus, each skull lolled on a neck with too many tapering vertebrae. Hundreds of wires pierced the uniform domes of black-gray bone, needles through eggshells. The only discernible facial features were the twin slits of nostrils, each as long as my index finger.
Holy shit!
I clenched the words through juddering jaws.
What? Oh God, what is it, B? Bodies. Weird bodies. All tangled up in the tubes from the roof. It's hard to explain.
Mike's voice was broken. I heard the click of his throat as he swallowed saliva.
Can you see a way out?
No, not yet.
Straight filaments stretched and rose from the skulls of the dead creatures as I approached, their languid stir like the autonomic response of plants. Faint black light flickered at the ends of a few, winking in and out like dying flashlights. The relentless cold had penetrated through to my bones, and I felt numb, my head filling with an unreal fog. Mike jogged on the spot behind me, his hands wrapped into his armpits. We needed a way out, and we needed to find it fast, before we froze to death. Reaching out to the swaying filaments, I touched a fingertip to the pulse of hypnotic anti-light, then snatched it back as a sucking heat flashed up my hand.
Mike, over here. These things are warm.
As I held up my palms, more of the snaky filaments lifted from their skull cradles, extending from their long-dead hosts and questing for my flesh. Warmth began to flow through me, such a blessed, comforting heat. I reluctantly drew away to prize the frozen meat of my brother's shaking hand from his chest, thrusting them into the anemone heat. But when that forest of alien hairs grazed his skin, their reaction was very different. Mike's scream of agony was a molten sound as they entered his fingers, burrowing slickly beneath his nails and deep into his hands. Black light bloomed around him like an alien flower. My equilibrium swayed as a queasy, sucking noise filled the room. Cables twisted and writhed all over the walls, revealing glimpses of other pulsing tunnels, then coalescing into purposeless tangles. But on the far wall, smooth as a camera's aperture, the animate's tubes dilated like a great iris, revealing a huge window. Sunlight streamed in, but cold and distant, our familiar star greatly diminished in size. A blue-white marble floated far to the right, lonely, tiny, beautiful, and terrifying. It was familiar from so many glossy space posters, overused in countless documentaries. I fixed it at the center of my star cataract, and my scarred cornea wept tears of black light. Mike bubbled out a groan from behind me. His arms blistered with tangled nodules, colonized by the parasitic worms of alien wires.
Oh God,
he moaned, his knees buckling.
Oh God, oh God.
The room shuddered, and the view through the window shifted faintly.
Brooke, get out. You need to get out.
Michael whispered, each word in agony, each breath a labored gulp. One arm twitched and spasmed, pointing towards an uncurling tangle on the floor. The deep black shine of metal coalescing into a circle raised from the boil of cables identical to the one on the beach. Mike's skin was losing color, draining to white, then no hue at all, and he fought as more filaments pierced his neck and cheeks, burrowing for his skull and the precious energy-rich soup inside of it.
I can fight you,
he screamed, his eyes welling anti-light and black blood, a spray of it as his hand thrashed from side to side.
I'd fight anything for her. I can feel your thoughts like you can mine. I can destroy this ship. I just need to.
Black light seared the room, bright enough to burn my star-blind eye. When it faded, only the wan sunlight from the viewing window remained. Picking out the white bones of my brother, lovingly tangled in quivering wires. A passing fishing boat spotted me on the little island, shivering in the sand, my hands covered in strange pinprick blisters. The disc was gone, and no column or black light shone into the heavens anymore. All that remained was a stupid, crippled girl and her worthless one-eyed tears. They searched for Mike for several weeks. Everyone was hopeful to start with, so reassuring, even though I told them it was futile from the start. He might have been lucky, they said. You just never know. They stopped saying those things after the first 2 weeks, and the search became an exercise in grimness, as everybody had to admit we were looking for a body, not a person. And no matter how I told my story, or to whom, not a soul believed me. Just like them, you'll all write my babbling off as insane, as the trauma-induced delusions of an already compromised girl. For a while, I even tried to believe they were right. I coached myself that I hadn't seen those things. I couldn't have visited an alien spaceship,
Mike had just slipped on the slopes of the rock islet and smashed his head as he fell into the sea. They found his phone, but it was so sodden and corroded that the photos were long gone. Unrecoverable despite my initial insistence that the evidence was inside. But now, like the sea eating away those delicate circuits, any belief that I imagined it all is being eroded. The black light has returned. At first it was random flashes, like a stuttering searchlight in the sky. But as the fear-drenched nightmares of my screaming brother have diminished, the light has waxed ever stronger. The steady beam shines downwards this time, its steady gaze sweeping our planet, ever widening, gathering power. Tonight it is so brilliant that I can see everything clear and cold with both eyes, the right in gray-black, monochrome, and the left in vibrant color. I don't know what it means. I don't know what will happen next. Perhaps some of you will die. Your flesh instantly vaporized like that of my late brother. Or perhaps everything human must be sacrificed, living fuel for the unknown horror that lurks high above us. I think I might be able to see exactly what will happen very soon. Tell your loved ones how much they mean to you. Treat each day on your little blue planet as a blessing. You've been living on borrowed time for far too long, and your luck has finally run out.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.